KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Oh, hello. Well, I'm from the Temescal, where it's always sunny.
Southside, Berkeley.
Santa Clara, California.
Coming up, we'll hear what it's like to grow up in the Indian Sikh community.
I always felt part of a silent community. We are pointed at, stared at, whispered about, yelled at, beaten up, shot at, and sometimes killed. But one thing we almost never are is listened to.
Then hate crimes against the community are up. One group says the media can help with more accurate reporting on Sikh stories.
Because if you actually understand who a person is, it's harder to judge and stereotype a class of people.
That's coming up today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Hate crimes against many communities have been up in recent years, including the Indian Sikh community. There are about 500,000 Sikhs in the U.S. A large number of them are here in California. A recent report by ProPublica found Sikhs are increasingly becoming a frequent target for xenophobes and racists. They face discrimination, violence, even murder. Last spring, two men were convicted of a hate crime for attacking Richmond resident Mon Singh Khalsa. Before they attacked Khalsa, they threatened to cut off his hair. As a follower of the Sikh faith, Khalsa doesn't cut his hair, and like many Sikhs, he ties a turban. Last summer, KALW reporter Kaval Roop Kaur Singh made a radio documentary that brings us the voices of young Bay Area Sikh Americans and their stories of trauma, healing, and resistance. Here's an excerpt.
Growing up as a Sikh in the Bay Area, I always felt part of a silent community. We are pointed at, stared at, whispered about, yelled at, beaten up, shot at, and sometimes killed. But one thing we almost never are is listened to. When you've been silent for so long, sometimes you forget how to speak. In middle school, people would tell me, "You forgot to shave your legs." I wanted to tell them, "I don't shave because my leg hair is divine." When a white man on BART lunged at me yelling, "You f***ing terrorist," I wanted to yell back. Remember Oak Creek, Wisconsin in 2012 when a white man shot and killed six people in a Sikh temple? It's you who looks like a terrorist, not me. I wanted to unmute myself and my community. My dad always tells me that Sikhs are like potatoes. Potatoes can grow anywhere. They are resilient. So I asked the Sikhs around me, how do we survive in America? I want to share stories of resilience in the Sikh community so at last we can hear ourselves speak. Let's start with Raginder Singh. He was in elementary school when he told his parents he wanted to play the trumpet. They said, "No, you're playing the violin." For them, the violin represented prestige.
Check, check. Ladies and gentlemen, how are you doing tonight?
Now, Singh is an accomplished violinist and composer who goes by the stage name Violinder. But when he first came to the U.S., he was a turban-wearing, Sikh immigrant kid with an accent, trying to go to school in Hayward. He didn't care about prestige. He just needed to make it through the fifth grade.
Walking in the first day of school, you have, you know, the teacher saying, "Hey, here's a kid, and he's going to join our class. And I have a turban," so that's already a lot of eyes on me. A month later, 9/11 happens, and now it's, "Oh, like, go back where you came from. We don't like you here. We don't like your kind," even though they don't know my kind. Kids, other adults, parents of the kids, people went out of their way to tell me that. I remember being at the age and feeling very alone. It's very belittling, and you feel like you have nowhere to go. Being a brown person with the you know, beard and turban in America, you still feel like the eyes are on you. I mean, there's not a moment that you don't. There's a lot of things that come with, you know, wearing a turban. Uniqueness, pride, a sense of identity, even a sense of fashion. This makes me different, and right now it makes me a target, but this is who I'm gonna be. It is me at the core. As I grew up, I realized instead of telling people, hey, don't pick on me, give them a reason to like you. First of all, that shouldn't even have to happen, right? That's the privilege of people that aren't six. Violins are like the queen of the orchestra. When I play on stage, you know, you have people watching you while you're playing. There's this sense of power. It just kind of feels like I can play anything.
That feeling of being empowered that Violinder has now as an adult is rare for many Sikh kids in America. Almost 70% of Sikh children who wear turbans get bullied in school. But when did the violence against Sikh Americans begin? To answer that, let's go back to 1904.
In the Panama Canal, 22 years ago, first, we go to the bottom of things and find ourselves sidetracked on the floor of the world-famous Gaillard Cut.
The U.S. recruited workers to help build the Panama Canal. Some of them were Sikhs from India who later moved to the U.S. Here's Bay Area scholar and activist Jadeep Singh.
At that point, you actually did have anti-Sikh hate crime because the newspaper was talking about the tide of turbans, the ragheads arriving in large numbers.
The early Sikh immigrants harvested crops, chopped wood, and built railroads. They worked for lower wages than white workers, and racial tensions climbed and then erupted. In 1907, in Bellingham, Washington, a mob of angry white workers attacked hundreds of Sikhs. Soon after, the U.S. passed a law that banned Asians from entering the country. But in 1965, that all changed.
Immigration Act 1965 removed 5 decades of racist immigration policy in the aftermath of the civil rights movement. So it was black people dying and risking their lives in the streets that led directly to South Asians getting into this country in the first place.
After 1965, Sikh immigrants came to America in waves from their homeland. After the British colonized South Asia, they left a border. Like a great gash across the land, it split the Punjab region in half. West Punjab became Muslim Pakistan, and East Punjab became Hindu India. That left Sikhs stuck in between.
August the 15th, 1947, Independence Day for India.
My grandparents' generation fled across the Pakistan-India border to build a new life in a new nation. Most of their children grew up during the 1980s in India when a movement for Sikh independence took hold. The military and police shot thousands of Sikhs dead. The economy of Punjab was destroyed. So, my parents' generation became a second generation of immigrants, seeking refuge in a place called America. That's where I was born. My generation began life in a country that had once conspired against our being here at all. We were the third generation forced to learn resilience, like potatoes, growing in infertile soil. When Sikhs came to America from Punjab, they brought their language with them. Today, youth are organizing to keep Punjabi alive in America.
There are some words that are spoken in Punjabi that just don't exist in the English language. Like Jagara, it's a roar, it's a call to action.
My name is Ramandeep Gore. I'm the Bay Area community organizer for the Jagara movement.
The Jagara movement works to empower Sikh youth. One issue they're addressing, the growing fear in the Sikh community that the Punjabi language is dying.
I feel as though it's becoming more and more difficult to communicate with our elders and have meaningful conversations in our own language. You know, I'm fearful, like 10 years down the line, when I have children, I want to be able to teach them the language that I spoke with my grandfather.
So, Jagada organizes Sikh youth to advocate for Punjabi classes in their high schools.
In Bakersfield, they really wanted to have Punjabi as a language in one of their high schools. So the students, they had, how many people? I think 1,500 people signed their petition in one day. Having Punjabi as a language, it'll help the students here who are raised in America to see, hey, my language is important.
Jagada also uses language to build political power. Last year, they registered voters in Sikh temples across California.
3,000 people, registered from the Punjabi community. As we were doing all of this, all the parents were asking us, well, can you help translate this? Or is the ballot going to be written in Punjabi? Will I be able to understand it?
Voting materials aren't available in Punjabi because there's no official record of how many Punjabi speakers are in the U.S. So Jagada launched a campaign this year to change that.
Resources such as voting rights and even materials around healthcare access get denied to the Punjabi community. And so we want to make sure that our community gets those resources.
As young Sikhs in America, we find ourselves translating Punjabi into English and English into Punjabi all the time. We aren't just translating words, but ideas, beliefs, and traditions. We're transitioning between worlds, acting as code switchers, like Jup Gill. Gill shaves his head, so he's bald, but sometimes he ties a turban. This is unusual because most Sikhs who tie turbans have long hair underneath. It means Gill can switch identities with ease. He says,
I definitely live between two worlds. It's like weird.
It's tricky living in that sliver of space between Punjab and America.
As a big brown man, you know, with a beard, I get like racially profiled pretty much everywhere I go. Even at the airport, I like to slide in a joke or two. You know, I used to wear this shirt that said 100% randomly searched at the following airports with a map of literally every single airport on it. And every time I get patted down, I ask them if I have to tip for the massage because it's really, it's an intense experience, especially nowadays, you know? If I pushed back on it with a violent, aggressive tone, I'd only get twice as much in return. Sometimes you have to swallow your pride a lot in order just to let somebody else feel powerful for a minute. And then over time, you chip away at their ego, at their sense of supremacy. My name is Jup Gill. I live in Fremont, California. I teach yoga full time.
Ready, take a deep inhale, lift. And exhale, hold. Inhale, lift. And exhale, hold. Try to get the toes to be eye level.
So, I mean, with Islamophobia in particular, there has been a direct impact on my life. So I was going to school in UC Irvine. I was doing Punjabi folk dance called Bhangra. We were dressed in our Bhangra outfits. Very authentic, almost more authentic than your average Indian person in India. We just finished, it was 8-minute routine, so we just decided to go outside to get air. Group of people who were drinking in the restaurant next door. They called us ragheads, towelheads, camel jockeys, like typical racial slurs directed towards brown people. It kind of went down, right? Like, I definitely got kicked in the face once or twice. One of the guys, his turbans, they grabbed it, ripped it off and stuff.
I pledge allegiance to the flag.
When I see other bald white guys, it does bring back that memory where I do re-experience that rush of fear and anxiety.
USA. We're going flag shopping for American flags. They're staring at our turbans. They're calling them rags. They're calling them towels. They're calling them diapers.
So I grew up with my hair. In kindergarten, because my dad yelled at me or something, I forget, I was like 5 or 6. He went to the bathroom, we were in India, and I decided to cut my hair, right? And he comes out, he grabs a wooden chair and he throws it and it breaks. And I'm just like, oh man, I really did it this time, you know? I don't think he was prepared to deal with that type of emotional trauma as well, right? Like, he grew up in the 80s in India, Punjab, where people were literally getting killed because of their turban. And for him, it was such a huge source of pride. And then I decided to keep my hair. Eventually, I started keeping a turban. You know, I remember even in high school, like, I was so proud of the fact that I had a turban, that I had a long beard. And then I hit that stage in life where, you know, I was balding and I cut it. I didn't understand how big and profound it would be to other people, right? One of my really good friends, he was offended. Like, it hurt him seeing a brother of his, kind of like a fallen brother almost. And I do feel that when I wear a turban, I command attention. But I also feel that if you're wearing a turban, you're reflecting the entire Sikh community. And that should be a determinant in how you behave. The whole purpose of wearing a turban, right, is like, now you have the community behind you. That if somebody does attack you, they attack the community at large. And everywhere you go, you represent the Sikh community. And yeah, not just you, but 25 million people in the world. And I think that's a very awesome responsibility.
That was an excerpt of the radio documentary I Ain't Here for No Reason, Stories of Sikh American Resilience by KALW's Kavalroop Kaur Singh. Find the full-length version of the story at our website, kalw.org, and click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Civil rights group the Sikh Coalition recently issued a reporter's guide to Sikhism. They delivered it to reporters, producers, and editors at more than 500 U.S. news outlets. The group says there's a lot of misinformation about Sikhs in the news cycle and that more accurate media reporting may lead to fewer hate incidents. Narinder Singh is executive director of the Sikh Coalition. He joined me in studio along with journalist A.C. Thompson. He reported on hate crimes against Sikhs for ProPublica's Documenting Hate project last year. First, I asked Narinder Singh for an example of what he thinks the media is getting wrong.
U.S. News ran a story on how are we educating our kids on terrorism. And in that story, there's an image that they picked by default. That image depicts a man with a turban that's a Sikh man. Right. Mm-hmm. And it happens that that Sikh man, it was a Getty stock image from, I believe, some Sikh who was serving in the Indian military guarding a location. Right. And so that's the image that they put about. And so we contacted them. We, you know, had to really start a mini social media campaign to get a picture corrected. They corrected it without apology. And that was a good example of, like, you can see someone on a deadline. I need a picture. Oh, this one fits my stereotype of what I think something related to terrorism looks like, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I think they you miss out, it's not just a correction, I spelled your name wrong, you're setting an image that and reinforcing a stereotype, and it's most often not out of malintent, it's on people acting quickly. Mm-hmm. But I don't think fully realizing the context of what that reinforces.
A.C. Thompson, he is talking about newsrooms where decisions have to happen quickly. The news has to get on the air or, you know, in that print paper by a certain time. Reporters have deadlines. What is the risk of that, you know, having that kind of environment where things are being done very, very, very quickly?
You know, the news cycle has sped up so much just in my time in the media, in your time in the media. I mean, I feel like every day, every year, it's so much faster, right? The Twitter news cycle is something unto itself that's just so rapid. And so the possibility of spreading bad information is just absolutely dramatically increased from what it was 10, 20 years ago. Right. I think that's my concern, is that in the high velocity, high speed news cycle that reporters, we can put out bad information. It can circulate widely, much more quickly and much further than it ever would before. And then it becomes much harder to correct and adjust the narrative to the truth later on.
Mm-hmm. Narinder, how did you decide what to include in this guide? You have everything from how to pronounce Sikh. I can relate to this. My grandfather's name is Ahmed, and I am tired of people saying Ahmed. So that's just one thing from mispronunciations. There's history of the Sikh community. It's not long. It's totally readable. How did you decide what to put in?
A few things. First of all, experience. You do this for 16 years and you get a library of mistakes that have been made by us, by reporters. So how do you, in as short and an efficient a way as possible, communicate the right information? So a lot of it was really hard-won truths of day in and out, day out, engaging with media members, with community members, with, you know, folks around us in our communities. The other part of it was making sure that we were trying to spread the message that's quite broad. So I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, right? I'm sure that's what, but looking at me with my turban and beard is not the thing that most people guess first, right? So we wanted to share that Sikhs are cab drivers and doctors and principals and store owners, and really showing that breadth of who the community was, where they came from, so that there's context for understanding why in our community there is both this incredible appreciation for the opportunity here in America, and you see that from a lot of immigrants who come over, this real sensitivity to the importance of rule of law because of coming from places in the world that don't have such a strong strength. So we wanted to give folks the backstory and a great view of who we were here today in the United States.
Mm-hmm. And so that this was meant for media members, people who are reporters. As a reporter, as a journalist, what does a guide like this do?
You know, we have a huge role to play, I think. You know, what we can do is we can say, hey, these are your neighbors. These are the folks that you share your community with. This is their story. Let them share their story. I think the newsroom guide can really help reporters get the basic questions answered and operate from a place of more knowledge that will improve their coverage. I didn't know anything. I didn't understand what was going on with the turban. I didn't understand what was going on with the beard. I didn't understand, you know, what is the theology? What is the cosmology? You know, and you would hear this misinformation. You know, it's kind of like Islam mixed up with Hinduism, mixed up with this. And it was bad. There's all kinds of bad information out there. And so I think for a lot of reporters, when we start reporting on the community, we really don't know what we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. And we really need a primer. We need somebody to hold us by the hand and say, hey, this is the deal.
Narinder, is your work harder in this era of anti-immigration rhetoric?
There's no doubt that there's more of an us and them in the country that exists today than has existed in the last decade, potentially since any time, even after 9/11. And so there's undoubtedly that exists. And so my perspective is, and the organization's perspective is, the way we break that is to increase understanding. Because if you actually understand who a person is, it's harder to judge and stereotype a class of people.
Are you optimistic?
I'm always optimistic. We have a phrase in Sikhism that's called Jardikala. It's this eternal optimism. And it's often kind of this notion of, if you look about history and where the faith has come from, and many faiths share this, where there's this incredible suffering that's happened in history. And how do you kind of emerge as a community from that in order to say, ours is not necessarily to think about the result, but to struggle. Right? To struggle for a better tomorrow, for who we are, for our country, for our neighbors. So I am optimistic that if we do more of this, despite the challenges that exist, despite a kind of divide that's occurred, we have an ability to bring things back together, because I fundamentally believe if you know your fellow man and woman, you will not take these actions. And so, yeah, I'm optimistic.
I bet you're still following the news and you will be calling those editors, I assume.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And thanks, AC.
Thanks for having me.
That was Narinder Singh, executive director of the Sikh Coalition, and reporter A.C. Thompson of ProPublica. You can find the Sikhism Reporter's Guide and A.C. Thompson's reporting all at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. And that's our show today. Our team includes Raquel Maria Dillon, Angela Johnston, Christine Nguyen, Truk Nguyen, Lilia Vega, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are Jackie Sajiko, Gabe Graben, and James Rollins. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Check out four local bands in one place tomorrow night at Elbow Room. The bands are Juice Bumps, Trash Vampires, Unscrewable Pooch, and Holly Glynn. And the show starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.